Welcome to the Authentic Conversations Podcast with Give Impact. Here are your hosts, Liz Ward and Maya Bullock.
All right. Well, welcome back, everybody, to episode 3 of Authentic Conversations. We've got our hosts here, Maya Bullock.
Hi.
Courtney Folks.
Hello.
And yours truly, Liz Ward. And we are so thrilled to be interviewing Matt Connor here in Charlotte, pastor of Newell Presbyterian Church. We've gotten to know each other for a couple of years, and he's going to be sharing with us some about his journey as both a pastor and someone who has helped lead his congregation through the discernment process of turning vacant land into affordable housing, and a lot of other things that have come along with that. And we are very grateful to have gotten to know you over the last couple of years and to have you as our guest number two for 2025.
So exciting.
I'm grateful to be here.
Awesome. Would you like to just, I know Liz did a short intro, but would you like to add anything else about who you are and where you were originally born?
Sure. I'm Matt Connor. I was actually born at Presbyterian Hospital here in Charlotte.
Ooh, me too.
North Carolina. Yeah.
Wow.
But I grew up in Gastonia, which is just west of here across the river, and grew up there, went to UNC Chapel Hill, from there to Atlanta back home. And North Carolina has always been home, and so the chance to be a part of a place that is a part of me was a thrill for so many reasons that we couldn't get our head around. So,
and for our listeners, we did not intentionally have our first two episodes both be by Tar Heels, but I'm not sad about it.
Literally all three, Liz, Matt, and Justin, all three from Charlotte.
None of it planned.
All went to UNC Chapel Hill.
But
well, as a Presbyterian, I would say it may not have been planned, but foreordained, maybe.
So how long ago was it that you moved back from Atlanta to Charlotte?
Yeah, so I graduated from Columbia Theological Seminary in 2017, and so started at Newell in August of 17. So I'm at 7.5 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and been at Newell ever since. They still put up with me.
I love it. How have you... I'm sure it's been fruitful over the past 7.5, almost 8 years, seeing that congregation grow during, I don't know, different times.
Think about it, 7.5 years. I mean, we just celebrated the 5th anniversary of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And so 5 of those 7.5 years have been,
oh my goodness,
post-pandemic beginning. And that's...
Yeah, I joke all the time that I'm in my third call at the same place. So I started again in the summer of 17, and those first 2.5 years, still really just learning what key went to what, right? Where's the pulpit? What is life like here? Getting to know my congregation. Newell is a small member church. There's no small churches, just small numbers. So small member congregation. And today, our membership is in the neighborhood of about 85. Mm-hmm. And a normal Sunday for us in person is around 50. We get another 10 to 15 online with our live stream. And, we sit on about 10 acres with 3 buildings, all of it underutilized. I have no doubt we'll get back to that in a minute. I've gotten to see a congregation that welcomed, at the time it was just my wife and I, into the family of faith there. And it was such an incredible fit from day one. And we have been so grateful to be at a place that we truly love. And it's a little heartbreaking sometimes to hear colleagues that don't always feel that way. Sometimes you don't get into a good fit, or, you know, you're chasing greener grass somewhere. But it is the place that continues to shape us. And they have loved us through the birth of our first son, and then our second son, and now are loving us with our newborn baby girl. And so our family is growing. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Our family has grown alongside Newell Presbyterian, and getting to see a church wrestle with what it means to be the church in the world in the 21st century. We started in 1890. We're not a new congregation. But constantly asking, what does it mean to be faithful here and now? What does a place-based congregation look and feel and act and sound like? And so with that, again, leading into COVID, then, Lord, what does church look like over screens? I did not go into ministry, one, willingly, or two, with the intent to do it over a screen or a microphone. So even this is a bit of a stretch for me. I know this is authentic conversations. Yeah, and then watching a group wrestle and grow alongside each other through COVID, we spent Sunday mornings, what was our worship hour, on Zoom doing what we called passing of the peace. And so we would do an hour-long church Zoom call where we simply checked in with each other, prayed with and for each other, and watching folks that had been members of this same church for their whole life feel like they grew closer together in that one-year season than the previous 50 was really special.
So this is all making me think about, if for our listeners who've listened to the first episode, we opened with the fact that one of the reasons why we started this podcast is because we, over the last 5 years, just keep meeting really incredible humans through all facets of our work. And we felt really selfish that if we were just to continue keeping that to ourselves. This is good stuff. We have some incredible, incredible humans in our community. And that's what makes community, is people connecting. And so you know that you're among one of our favorite humans list, and which is why we've got you here on our third episode.
Wasn't Justin Perry here last week? He should assess y'all mentally if I'm on the list of favorite people.
Sure.
Justin, come back.
Yeah. Oh, we love Justin. So, and what part of that is, you know, we want to be able to highlight the great work that people are doing in our space, but we also want to highlight the people. So I don't want to gloss over that. So we're going to get you to invite you to share something authentic about yourself. You can share anything you want, whatever you feel led to share. It can be something that a lot of people know or something that might be surprising or whatever, you know, feel like you want to reveal. Tell us something about Matt Connor.
An open-ended invitation to speak is a dangerous game with a pastor. But I would say an authentic confession of mine is that I am endlessly curious. So I enjoy a lot of things, and I read a lot of different avenues. I listen to a lot of different things. I try to put my body in a lot of different spaces and in conversations with folks from all different stripes. And so, yeah, I'm endlessly curious. I will go between reading a Western thriller to learning about the impact of race on the affordable housing crisis. And so trying to, I don't fit very many boxes well, but yeah, curious, I would say, is my descriptor.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah, I was going to say, you'll fit right in.
No boxes over here. I love it. I love it. So after we have you share something authentic, we ask if you would like to pull an affirmation card.
I'd be happy to.
Yeah, we're going to start that early this time.
It says, I laugh. Let me be still today and listen to the truth in silence.
And does it resonate?
Yeah, I am not a very good be stiller. I work on it. That I know you're busy, Lizzie, right? And as a fellow ADD-er, and a restless soul in a lot of ways, sometimes I do struggle to be still. But I have learned not only to practice it, but the beauty of it in what I do. And over these last now 3 years, this journey with Newell, we couldn't have done this without being still and listening and paying attention. And so I love it.
So some of the things this makes me think of, well, one, I'll have a small confession I'll make. Maya, you already know this one. But I've always said, I don't have any tattoos, but I've always said, if I get a tattoo, it's going to be the words "be still" on my forearm. I don't know. I actually just recently bought some fake tattoo paper so that I can make versions of my own and try it out on my arm. We'll see if I get up the guts to actually do it. But something that we also talk about with a lot of the congregations we do work with is this whole concept of go slow to go fast. This, the be still, the slow, the discernment process, the listening is a really important part of the overall process. And so I wonder if this is going to lead us into talking about the work that you've been doing with Newell and kind of what that, how that started.
Yeah. Well, ironically, so my forearm tattoo is what's next. It's Latin from Leon Alberti, a 15th century Italian Renaissance man who was a poet, priest, and architect and mathematician and always paying attention to what is next. So I think we combine what's next and be still, and we might find something.
That's hilarious. And going back to what Liz said about discernment, I was going to ask you to dig into how long you've been pastoring, but did you have a discernment phase before you decided to go that route?
And well, can you define discernment? Because some Megan on our team also pointed out that that's not maybe a word we use a lot in Presbyterianism, but may not be widely utilized. So if you can talk a little bit about what that means.
Yeah, so putting me on the spot there. I'm not sure the etymology of discernment, but I would say for me, in my words, it's kind of a prayerful paying attention, a listening, a trying to be in touch with what God is up to, whether that be a call on our lives or on the life of our community or the lives of our family and friends, the discernment, doing our best to tap into that and say, what's next, right? But yeah, so I love Maya, your question, though, of how did I decide to become a pastor, because I would say I didn't. I swore I was not going to be a pastor, actually.
And really?
Yes.
Did you resist, like, those fails when they first came?
Oh, with a good healthy dose of it, yeah.
Tell us more.
So the quicker version, for the sake of all of our listeners, that usually if you have to listen to a preacher tell the story, it's over a beer or two. So that offer is extended to anyone. But, so I grew up in the church. Every time the doors were open, we were there. And I am unbelievably grateful that my parents loved us enough to lovingly drag us to church. And I did love the church. I had no animosity towards it at all. But when I graduated high school, I thought I would kind of take the more traditional route. I'm doing Joey Tribbiani air quotes for those of you listening. And graduate from the church for a while, too, and maybe come back when it was time to get married or have kids or something. And my wife, who was girlfriend at the time, we're high school sweethearts. Hey, Sarah. And she went to Carolina a year ahead of me, fell in love with campus ministry. I was like, that's going to be your journey. That's wonderful. That's not going to be mine. And so, but she's like, oh, just come once and try it out, and I'll leave you alone about it. Lies. But I said, okay, I'll come see what it's about. And I never missed a week. I fell in love with it. I found a space, a community that allowed that authentic wrestling, the chance to ask big questions that I had never asked before, to do life together. And I think looking back, with my focus on community development these days, I think a lot of it was rooted there, because we weren't just there for worship, right? We were there to study. We were there to eat. We were there to meet with people like just a random Tuesday. It was a space for us to really do life together and seeing what might it look like if you can put all of these pieces together to live, work, play, and pray in the same vicinity. And that's really what we've taken to heart at Newell over the last couple of years. But as I was getting towards graduation, I majored in economics and religious studies. I was one of two in my graduating class at Carolina to do that pairing.
Wow.
And me and Julian were in a lot of classes together. But I used to joke, oh, I'm going to work with religious studies. Econ is just my passion. And I said that very tongue-in-cheek. I intended to become a financial planner, move back home, work with my dad. And religious studies was just an academic interest at the time. And I really loved the courses, though, loved the professors, and found that I was wrestling with a lot of the things that we were talking about in our class. And so then, again, fast forward, senior year, everybody knows what they're doing for the rest of their lives, right? That's what college is for. I did not. I wanted to be everything. I wanted to be a detective. I wanted to be a photographer. I wanted to teach high school. I wanted to be a social worker. I wanted to be literally anything, just didn't know what it was, and church was never in the conversation. And so then realized I'm jealous of my campus minister's job. And like, you're just a person. Like, why is this a career? And really, Sarah asked me, she said, well, have you prayed about it? Prayed about it? No. Like, that did not enter the chat. And so then started to a little bit and was losing sleep, going through that like really tough season of like, what in the world am I supposed to do with my life? And found myself running through campus at 4 a.m. It's pretty quiet then. I'd gone to bed at 4 a.m. I'd never gotten up and run at 4 a.m. and just found myself kind of having it out with God. There was no burning bush, no booming voice, but I felt like maybe, and I've tried to be this defensive and vague, continuing my theological education was maybe something I was called to do. And so I started my application that day, applied to two div schools, two seminaries, and seminaries only because John, my campus minister, lovingly encouraged me to consider seminary. And yeah, so just did that. Fall in love with seminary, go to Decatur, right outside of Atlanta, to go to Columbia, and again swore was going to be in ministry of some sort, just not a church. Did 2 years at a youth detention center as the chaplain. Did 2 years in campus ministry with Agnes Scott. Worked at MD Anderson Cancer Hospital in Houston. And then did an internship at a church because it was part of the requirement. And begrudgingly loved it. And realized that churches do a little bit of all of those things. And so then I started applying for pastor-ish jobs, just not pastor. And look who had the last laugh at that. 7.5 years later, I'm a solo pastor and wouldn't be doing anything if you couldn't pay me enough to get me to change.
That's so awesome. And in your 7.5, almost 8 special years at Newell, was housing an option or a conversation, or did that just start like in recent years?
Yeah, so we got to that in kind of a roundabout way as well, just the authentic discernment and prayer together. Our small member church we don't have any endowments. We don't have any money coming in other than what people give. So we're a giving congregation, and it had always just worked. We run a razor-thin budget. It had always just worked. We didn't know how. We had a line item, literally, that was called the leap of faith receipts for a number of years. It was just the difference between expected expense and income to make it balance. And then we changed it to the God Always Provides Fund because that's what we had found to be true for years and years. Until around COVID is when it kind of stopped just working out. And and so we were really kind of looking around out of both a sense of necessity and the fact that looking around as we're focusing on space with COVID, what's safe, what's not safe, what's sustainable, what's not sustainable. And we're realizing we spend, you know, roughly a third of our budget and an ungodly amount of hours because we do it ourselves. We have wonderful volunteers that get out there and cut the grass, that we're just keeping this space up and kind of start asking for what? How might we take what is our largest liability and turn it into our greatest asset? And again, in the midst of COVID, paying attention to space, you can't live in Charlotte or really any city for that matter and not be aware of the affordable housing crisis going on. And so when you kind of look at these things side by side, right, I always say part of my job is not to tell you what to think, but what to think about as a pastor. And so if we say the call that of the gospel is to welcome the stranger, feed the hungry, clothe the naked, care for the sick, visit the imprisoned, like caring for people's actual needs and time and place and being a part of a city, Jeremiah, right? Pray for the welfare of the city to which I have sent you. That how do we hold that in tension with the reality that we live in here with the affordable housing crisis, with economic disparity, with all of these different pieces of the puzzle? And what might it look like to put those in conversation with each other? And so that's really how it started. It was our first Sunday back inside since COVID, Ascension Sunday, the text from Acts, men of Galilee, why are you standing around looking up? And Luke doesn't tell us this detail, but I always read it as, why are you standing in that field looking up? And so we really started to wrestle with, what are we called to do with this space? How are we called to be stewards of it, right? Mm-hmm. Not owners, but stewards, and to care for it in a season, which led us to people, as it always should, right? Talking to people, listening to folks. Who do you know that's doing great work? Who do you know that's in this operating in this way? And trying to pay attention when those same names come up again and again. And for us, that was Dream Key through any number of conversations that we had, and just finding a mission-aligned partner that we had no idea housing would be such a focus, to be honest. We just thought it might be a piece of it. And then as we started to engage with them more and more, it was truly an organic partnership in developing this dream together.
Yeah, and for those of our listeners who don't know who DreamKey is, they are a local nonprofit that has been doing work in our community for 35 years. They just had their anniversary this past fall. We were all there and got to celebrate them, and they're also the firm where I started my career in affordable housing back when they were called the Housing Partnership, and so they're near and dear to my heart, and they do incredible work across homeownership, rental, workforce housing, neighborhood revitalization, down payment assistance, education, all sorts of stuff. I mean, they really just, they often move behind the scenes, and they do so much across the city that people have no idea the depth of their work. So I'm excited that they ultimately were who you guys ended up with.
That's right. My very pastoral response is they're dope.
They're dope, yeah. Now it makes me think about Fred Dodson. I'm going to give you a little shout out here.
Fred
is one of their EVPs or their EVP for real estate and has been my personal mentor for many, many years, I guess 10 years now. And he's my Yoda.
As he should be.
Yeah, he's one of the most wise people I know. And so he's helping to lead that project.
Yeah. Fred came out for the first time to visit, and he knows I've told this story before, but he showed up, and my confession is I didn't actually know Fred was the EVP there when I was reaching out, doing almost a cold call email to say, hey, a friend of mine told me I should talk to you. And so he shows up, and he's dressed so nice in his button down and slacks and his dress shoes, and I'm out there in, like, jeans and a golf shirt. And I'm like, you want to walk the field with me for a while? And we ended up outside for the whole hour and just dreamed together about what might be happening and stirring in that area. And it was really a practice of me and my team, which independently was named the Dream Team, by the way, because our goal was to dream about what God might be doing in and through our congregation in this season. And so all along it was kind of casting a vision and saying, do you see it? And if so, then what might it look like to work together? If not, that's okay. Who else should we talk to? And then, like, letting it shape and form and morph along the way.
So one of the words you said just a little bit ago, and I would just, if you saw me pick up my phone, I was Googling the definition, trying to see exactly what it was. But you used the word stewardship. And in this season of life, that's one of my favorite words because it's in opposition to the word ownership, which implies to have control over, to do whatever you want with. And stewardship implies to do something with a responsibility to that thing and to the others. And so the vision of you and Fred getting to walk that field together and to dream and to vision, that makes me think of stewardship. Because you guys weren't just thinking about what could it be for us, but what could and should this be? And I think that's a really powerful process to incorporate in the discernment and trying to think about. I mean, that goes way beyond faith and housing. I mean, those are critical words for all of the resources we have at our disposal is how do we steward these things? My husband and I, we have a little budget spreadsheet that, we set up years and years ago. And at the very top, it is a reminder that all that we have is not our own and that we are entrusted with these resources and how are we to use them and to think about, I like to use the word investment mindset. And we talk about this a lot because you're a financial geek too, but we're investing in it.
Yeah, that's right. And I, financial geek may give me more credit than I deserve, but I do have a side hustle. I'm a registered investment advisor. But I love this notion of stewardship as caring for our time, talents, and treasures, right? And so how do we, whether that be our money, our the space that we find ourselves planted, our relationships, stories, right? As a pastor, I feel like I'm in the stewardship world all the time. Is it caring for people and lives, or is it resources or land or buildings? You know, because, again, the vision with this development on our corner kind of did and still does have an element that we dreamed that a garden would be a piece of the puzzle because, you know, stewardship, to your point about ownership from the creation story, right, where people often translate it and have dominion over the beasts of the field and the plants and everything, that we have dominion, it makes it seem like we're to use and abuse it. And a better translation is actually steward, that we are called to steward this earth that we are planted in. And so I think the notion of stewardship is my favorite thing to talk about. And I find in church world, at least in Presbyterian USA church world, stewardship and evangelism are often two swear words, right? And so, but instead, how do we talk about stewardship as a way to live out the call of the gospel, to share the good news, and to offer hope to a world that so desperately needs it? That's stewardship and evangelism.
So the next thing that makes me think about is the role of fear and how sometimes that's the thing that knocks the tower over, pulls the feet out from underneath you when folks are using an ownership lens and you're focused on control, the loss of that control can bubble up fear. And also, even if you're in stewardship, sometimes people have fear of, how do I know I'm doing the right thing? And we try and encourage folks to not make decisions out of fear, but to start first with the core of a loving vision. If we are to love our community the best we can, or love ourselves, everybody in unison, what does this thing look like? But inevitably, we're humans. Fear is going to creep in either through one person or a couple of people. And as a pastor, you're in a position of leadership. Did that present itself in when you guys were going through this process? What did that look like? And how did you clearly navigated it, because you're on the other side of getting rezoning and, you know, your partnership agreements, and y'all are working through, you know, the beginning phases of this project. What did that look like?
Yeah, I think there's a lot there that I think you brought up some really awesome points. That this notion, though, that I would argue that to counter fear is to maybe lead with truth, right? And so for us as a congregation, it started with the truth-telling of our reality, like being really open about what is and isn't sustainable, but even more than sustainable, what is and isn't thriving ministry, right? I have no interest at all in just sustaining. I think that churches are called to thrive. And as people who, I'll say as a Christian pastor, if my identity is rooted in the incarnation and the resurrection, it is ironic to me how quickly we go to feasible instead of faithful. And so what it looks like to just say, look, I don't pretend to know the whole picture, but I know who's got my back, right? One of my favorite stories from the entire Old Testament is the call of Moses. And he's, you know, standing at this little famous campfire barefoot. And God's like, I'm calling you to go speak to Pharaoh and, you know, lead my people out of bondage. And Moses does what any reasonable human would do. And it's like, yeah, you got the wrong guy, right? Like, I'm not the right one for the job. And for Moses, I'm a fugitive with a stutter, right? Like, you want me to go speak and do this? And what I love so much, though, is God's response, because Moses is emptying his pockets of all of his qualifications or lack thereof, all the reasons why he's not the right person to do this. And God never once says, yes, you are. God says, I will go with you, right? That God was never looking to hire Moses in the first place. God was calling Moses to accompany him in a work that he was already stirring. And so I think for us, it's not a matter of Newell being creative enough or smart enough or connected enough or resource enough. Lord knows that one's not true, right? But to be faithful enough to step out and say, you have called us. We don't know the whole map, but we know that you're calling us to take this step. And that's how we've tried to do it together in the face of fear, right? Because sure, there are uncertainties in anything involving church, right? But especially undertaking a total reimagining of church property and building affordable housing, creating first-time home ownership on land that has sat as just a field. Like, that's scary, and there's unknowns out there. But I think rather than starting with how, we have to start with why and what.
It makes me think, back in the spring of last year, I can't believe it's actually almost been a year, but the city of Charlotte held their Faith and Housing symposium, and our team helped plan and put the event together. And there was a panel, and Gwen Garnett was one of the speakers. I think she's the one that said just do it scared.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I love that.
That quote has always stuck with me. And so when you said that, that just popped into my head. Do it scared.
Yeah. I would listen to anything Gwen said. So, yeah, do it scared sounds good enough to me.
Outside of fear, were there any other challenges that you faced during your faith and housing journey or so far?
Yeah, so one of the things that we sought to do, and I know we speak I here on this podcast, right? But I'm on behalf of a ministry team at our church and our congregation, we sought to pay attention to, is this really the work we're called to, right? Is this really what we believe God is calling us to do? And if so, making sure we had built that consensus, even if it's not, 100% agreement from day one. You could say, I want to change the color of the carpet, and that's not going to get agreement on anything. And so covenanting to do this work together, to walk this road together, and to say, like, look, if this is what we're called to do, then when it gets tough, we remind ourselves why we're doing it, right? That's why I said start with the what and the why, because the how will get you off track all day, every day. And Nietzsche said something to that effect, that when you have the why to live, you can deal with anyhow. So to this notion of being really hyper-focused on a sense of call to create belonging in our community that so desperately longs for it was where we kept coming back to when things did get hard. Because people would say things, the comment section is a dangerous place. And, to see criticism or misunderstanding of, A, what affordable housing is. That's one of the biggest things that I find. And I am one that I intentionally use affordable housing as the language because I find it opens doors for some education that I'm not going to act like it's not something, There, some call what we're building workforce housing, which leads to questions like, well, other people work. Why is this considered workforce housing and not something else? Mm-hmm. But also, when you start to, it's easy to be against numbers or against hypotheticals. It's hard to really be hypercritical of people. And when you start to put faces and stories to what affordable housing is, it really changes the conversation, right? For example, we for 3 years got to host this beautiful program called Families Doing Time. And it was for any family impacted by incarceration and deportation with our closest partners at the Center for Community Transitions. Shout out, y'all. I'm eating dinner in the basement of the church with this mom who, strip away some detail here, but this mom who her family had been made to feel untouchable, right? Dad's in prison. She's got three kids, and she's talking about this fear of having to move for the third time in as many years. She's a nurse with a master's degree. Why is that the reality in our city? That I am crazy enough to believe that a teacher or a firefighter should be able to own a home in this community in which they work, to say nothing if you double up those, right? Two teachers in Charlotte, Mecklenburg, come in right about the 80% AMI mark. And that's affordable housing. And so I think finding ways to counter fear with narrative is one of the biggest challenges and joys we have found in this process.
I love that. That actually makes me think when we post the show notes, I'm going to include a link to what the area median income looks like. And for those of us that practice in this space, and for folks who are seeking to qualify for a variety of different types of services, programs, access to certain types of housing, It's often based on how many people are in your household, and then varies based on how much money you make. So anyways, we can include a link on that so you can see, because a lot of times, you're right, people think affordable housing and they think folks aren't working, but that's definitely not the case. And so we want to help break that misnomer.
Yeah, and two, what we have found a lot of too is, affordable housing gets a very polarizing reaction, and everybody's like, oh, it's Section 8. And it's like, well, first of all, it's not. And second, I think you're misunderstanding Section 8, right? Like, our neighborhood right down the street from our church that takes Section 8 vouchers is the safest neighborhood in our community. When people talk about affordable housing is going to drive crime up or property values down, the data does not agree with that. And I think the chance to see what does affordable housing look like, feel like, act like in an area, really, it's just a matter of being able to share stories.
Well, yeah, and it makes me think that a lot of times people fear the unknown, things that they're unfamiliar with and things that they can't get their head around. And so having relationships with other people, or to use your term earlier, to be insatiably curious about things instead of just assuming you know the answer, can be really powerful.
Yeah, and to add on to Liz, I think misconceptions, I think that's what Matt was getting at, are a big piece to, I think, the judgment that comes with affordable housing and the who lives there and the what they look like, and that they're lazy or they don't work. And, you know, like you said, they drive up crime. So thank you for highlighting that. I wanted to ask you, what advice can you offer to the leaders of other faith-based organizations that are pursuing this work?
Make friends. make friends, make more friends. And I say that not jokingly. That would be my advice. But I think I started with going to talk to people that I trusted and respected and asking a lot of questions. The folks at DreamKey love Zooming with me because I come in with a million questions every time we have a conversation. And but I think to ask people, you know, this is becoming a real movement in Charlotte. It's been a movement in other places in the country, and there are congregations in Charlotte that did this 20 years ago too, right? So this is not like complete cutting edge work here. So talk to people, right? If you don't know someone in your community that is already engaged in this, then start with those you do know and say, do you know anybody? And being able to say, look, what nonprofits are there in this community that do this work? What Give Impacts, not that there's others, but what Give Impacts are there around us? What, you know, do I know my local officials, like my representatives? You know, Luana Mayfield is our councilwoman who is helping spearhead the Faith and Housing Initiative. Renee Johnson is our District 4 representative. And being able to be in conversation with both of those women along this process has really helped immensely because they are unbelievably connected. You know, mm-hmm. if I would say my job as a pastor is not to know all the things, it's just to know the people. And so if you come at me with a question about rezoning law, I need to know the attorney that handles that. I don't need to know it. If you have a question about development, I don't have to be a developer. I have to work well with developers. And so I think getting to know people in your community and finding ways to partner well and to do so with no agenda other than, look, I feel like we should know each other because we live and work in the same area, right? When Jesus said, love your neighbor, we know it wasn't geography. But way too often we forget about geography, right? And so CCT, the Center for Community Transitions, and us starting that partnership, they're a mile and a half down the road from us, right? Like, it was literally, how can we be good neighbors together? And so I think starting with neighbors, starting with asking questions of what are we called to do together and being open to it, right? It might involve housing. It might not. But everybody, I think, is called to be a part of this process together because your church may not have 10 acres, or your community of faith may not own, you know, an untapped building, but do you have dollars, people, land, or what's the fourth one? I could have done it just a second ago. Dollars, people, land, buildings.
Yeah, there we go.
Yes, dollars, people, land, or buildings. You have at least one. I would argue every church has at least two.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it that you can bring to the table to work well with others in collaboration?
Well, and I'm curious if you've also seen this. I know Maya and I have, that once you kind of land on a vision of something, or it starts taking root and you get excited about it and you're willing to talk to other people about it and there's alignment, or like it's really aligned with what's good for all, you just never know. You can share something with someone and they're like, oh, well, you should be talking to X, Y, and, you know, so-and-so, or you should, I have this connection over here. Sometimes things just really organically begin to unfold, and it starts with the willingness to lean into that call or that vision and willingness to talk about it.
Yeah, and I think, too, fear can creep in with that, right? Mm-hmm. I was so nervous to tell somebody the first time that I wanted to talk about this, but I think it comes back to holding the vision loosely, right? We're stewards, not owners. This isn't my vision. This is something that I'm doing my best to care for in this season. And I might be wrong, right? I very well could be. But to tease that out, test the spirits, right, as Paul said. Like, to this notion of teasing it out with others is where I think the Spirit works most fruitfully, is in conversation with other people.
Yeah. The city of Charlotte has done a great job since last year, really trying to help start to develop a toolkit of resources for congregations in our area that are really trying to ask these questions. And they recognize so many people are not real estate developers, but they want to try and equip and provide resources to any of those congregations that feel pulled to step forward. And maybe not even just the congregations, but organizations, people, anybody can access these resources. They're publicly available. And so I do want to give a little shout out that there's a website. I am totally blanking on it. If you Google Charlotte Faith and Housing, that website will pop up first in your search. It's on the City of Charlotte website. But there's trainings that we helped do. We did them in person, and then they're on YouTube. The slides that go with them, supporting handouts.
The checklist.
Yep, there's readiness checklists out there. Those are all published now within the last, you know, one got published a couple weeks ago. Some of the stuff has been out there for the last 6 months. And then also there's some other resources, the Presbytery of USA, so the national organization, developed these booklets in partnership with
Rooted Good.
Rooted Good, mm-hmm. Thank you. In partnership with Rooted Good. One is called How to Rent Well, one's How to Develop Well, and the third one is What About Taxes? And a couple of months ago in the fall, we got to meet a representative from Presbytery, and they gave us hard copies that we can hand out. And so if there are listeners on this call that want to get a hard copy, just email podcasts@giveimpact.org, or you can reach out to Matt if you know Matt, and he'll make sure that you get a copy. But just let us know. We have these at our office where you guys can stop by and pick up a copy, but you've got to let us know, schedule an appointment so that you can make sure we're there.
Yeah, and the only thing I'd add to that, too, because those resources are phenomenal, and the folks at Rooted Good are doing really, like, way-paving work in our country as a whole, and with the Presbyterian Church USA in particular, but not limited to that. And so what I would say, though, to any member of a faith community anywhere is to start with prayer, though, right? If you don't pick up the how-to guide and go to, now I need to pick our developer, we need to pick our, you know, housing type, we need to talk about, you know, the UDO, and we, like, if you get into the weeds, then you will never do it. I think you have to start with prayer and asking, what is it that is true and faithful and right and good for this community in this time, in this season, and do that thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I often see that, you know, people who don't directly work in real estate don't always know how long it takes, like the process. Did you feel like once you started a faith and housing journey that it was going to happen like in a year or in a certain amount of months?
Yeah, you know, so I think God's time is always right on time, right, as they say. But I feel like for us, it really felt right because for some it was fast and for some it was too slow. And I feel like that's how you know you're on it, right? That there is times that, my goodness, if I had to wait on another email or another rendering, I was going to pull my hair out. Those of you who are listening don't know why that's funny. But
he has no hair.
But I think trusting that timing, the slow work of God, that if this is right, then it will be right on time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Time, don't let it be a discouragement. But I will ask, just to end us, what are you most excited about when thinking about the future of your campus?
The future of Newell Presbyterian Church's campus is so exciting. And this, you know, we started with this question of what's next, which is kind of my take on the Reformation's Latin creed, Semper Reformanda, right? Always being reformed. The tense, the agency there is important, that we don't do the reforming. But having these conversations like y'all talked about and hinted at with people that you don't know where it will go, right? I went to an HOA meeting to tell them about our project and what we were striving to do and why. And I knew I was going to go take some on the chin. It was my job to stand up there and, you know, get a little heat for developing more in a congested area. But after being able to explain why the church is pursuing this, what we hope it becomes, and the fact that we are offering something that maybe they misunderstood, that, you know, we have in Northeast Charlotte, Rocky River, and Old Concord Road, that's where we sit, there's a ton of development. It is all rental. And I am not anti-renting. I want to say that explicitly. We need people at every point of the river of preventing homelessness. So you need the 30% AMI, the housing services. You need the 40 to 60 rental, 60 to 80, and 80% homeownership too. You need people working at each point. And so wherever your point of call is good. Let me say that out loud. But through that, one of the neighbors actually came up afterwards, and I was like, oh, boy, here we go. And he was like, let's go get lunch. And, of course, we did. And we sit there and we talk about this vision and what this process has been like and how it's been so transformative for our congregation and we hope in terms of our community. And we start talking about his own vocational discernment. And then one thing leads to another, and I'll, again, fast forward a little bit, we are in very serious negotiations of renovating our education building to become a second chance employer coffee shop, nonprofit space that'll be co-working on one half coffee shop space together, fellowship hall on Sunday afternoons on the back half. And that was from talking to somebody that I had no idea it would go anywhere, something that exciting. And so I find, again, when you talk about things that really matter and you do it with good people in an authentic mm-hmm. way that says, look, we're just trying to be good listeners to each other and share some of our vision and some of what keeps us excited about the future. Because I said early on, our vision is live, work, play, and pray. We talked about housing. We got some other pieces of that puzzle to put together, and we have the campus to do it. And so I think that our church has an exciting vision for what community development in time and space looks like. It was Churchill, when it's time to rebuild Parliament, said, first we shape our space, then our space shapes us.
Mm.
We are striving in this season of shaping space to do so in a way that will shape us back, centering community and belonging in the name of Jesus.
That's amazing. And I'm trying to remember the exact statistic that ties in with this. Our church shared it on Sunday, but it was, you know, a leading challenge for our country right now is isolation. And being able to build spaces that where people can come together from all different backgrounds is really important for creating healthy people and healthy communities.
And if the church can't be that space, then what in the world are we doing?
Yeah. So we want to encourage all of our listeners to be a part of creating spaces for people to come together and to get to know one another. And there were a couple little nuggets in there that I wanted to add some definitions to. And we knew this was going to come up, and we forgot to, AMI. So if anybody's listening and is not a housing expert or even, you know, just a loose listener, the term AMI is Area Median Income, and it's published once a year. For last year's number, 2024, it was 106,000 is the number for a family of four. And the new numbers for 2025 are going to come out within the next month. So we're waiting to see what those are going to be. And then from there, like I mentioned, there's a grid that depends on how many people you have in your household. And most commonly, the term affordable housing means that units or housing is produced and made available for folks who are less than 100% of AMI. Some markets it goes up to 120% or 140% AMI, depending on the whether you're a high-cost market or not. And it's really, really critical that those families who are, you know, doing such important work in our community have an opportunity to live without having to drive. many, many hours, and because that's going to influence where they decide to take jobs and whether or not they partake in a particular community. And it's a whole complex web. We won't go down all of that right now, but I wanted to make sure I left everybody with a definition of what area median income was. And thank you so much.
Yes, this is, thank you so much.
There's so much we can unpack and keep talking about. And so this is probably one of the first of a series of folks that we've worked with that are doing incredible work out in the community. In the show notes, I'm going to include some information about the development you guys are working on, because I realize we didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about the exact, we talked about your partner, the fact that you have 10 acres. I think it's, how many units is it?
So the development is actually on half of that. It's just under 5 acres, but we're doing 50 homes.
50 homes, that's right. And they're for sale.
For sale.
For home ownership. And so incredible opportunity. We will share a link. And also I want to give you a kudos, Matt. Matt just got an award. I know you're going to blush, but I just want to say you deserve it. You deserve the recognition for the innovation you've partaken in, and I'm excited to have your leadership here in Charlotte. And so thank you for lending your gifts and your talents and just your company with
Absolutely.
All of us.
Absolutely.
I'll just end with saying it is a joy to be able to take some holy risk alongside the beloved folks of Newell Presbyterian, because this has truly been a community-driven effort and a congregation doing their best to breathlessly keep up with the movement of the Spirit. And so, yes, I happen to be their pastor, but this has been an incredibly transformative journey for us. And I always say, if we started out of a sense of necessity that we can't afford to do nothing, if we started out of a sense of trying to avoid death, we have found new life in the process. And so I think that'll preach anywhere.
Yeah, that's incredible. As it is, it's really all about the journey. It's not about the A to B. And who you're with. Amen. We love our journey of being able to be together. And we're so grateful for the listeners tuning in to meet some of the people that are part of our journey and to get to know us a little bit better. And we just thank you so much. And we want to leave you with a reminder that each and every one of you are worthy.